The Brendan O'Connor Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Discover a team that's always here to support you at All Care, taking care of communities across Ireland.
Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.
Welcome back. Texter tells me that Fraggle Rock was what the basement bar in a certain Dublin city pub was known as, because it was where all the long-haired hippies went. So there you go. Time now for a weekly look at what to watch on screens big and small. Editor of the Business Post magazine, Nadine O'Regan, and Irish Times film correspondent, Donald Clark, have the inside track. Good afternoon, guys.
Afternoon.
Donald, I suppose Guillermo del Toro is a bit like where Jim Henson was at when he made Fraggle Rock, in that he's top of the world, best picture Oscar, so he has a star-studded cast now for his follow-up project, Nightmare Alley. Any good?
Yeah. I've
got issues
with it.
Oh, no.
Look, this is one thing you'd say about it. You mentioned where he currently sits in the hierarchy. This is the sort of film that you once got to make when you just won the Oscar for Best Picture. But I think given the financial performance of Nightmare Alley, it may no longer be the sort of film you get to make under those circumstances. No one would see it, and it's sort of stumbling a little bit in the awards season as well. The film is based on a 1946 book by William Lindsay Graham that inspired a terrific 47 film with Tyrone Power, about a carnival huckster who inherits a mind reader act and then takes that on to high society with grim results. Bradley Cooper this time takes over from Tyrone Power. Rooney Mara is his partner, and Cate Blanchett is a society therapist who kind of colludes with a couple in a big con.
You see, that sounds amazing on paper.
No, I mean, it's not. There's a lot to recommend it. I mean, but yes, we are looking at Del Toro. Because Del Toro is who he is, and because he won everything, The Shape of Water, he's been allowed to expand this quite tight story into something on the scale of Lawrence of Arabia. It lasts 2.5 hours. It costs $60 million. It also stars Toni Collette, Richard Jenkins, William Dafoe, David Strathairn. And it's really not half as successful as the less cluttered early picture. The set direction is beautiful, as you'd expect from when you're throwing that amount of money at it. But it lands the film with this kind of grandiosity that works against the noirish tone of the narrative. It feels very heavy, very opulent, very calculated. Yet, I don't be too hard on it. For all that, there's a lot to enjoy here.
Okay.
Cooper is very good at being simultaneously oily and charming. He does those two things. He can get those two things together very well. And they do here. Yeah, they make them. I won't spoil anything, but they make the most of one of the best last scenes in noir fiction, I think.
Okay.
I won't say any more, but it's all great in the original.
But it could have been. It could have been a smaller film.
Actually,
essentially,
even more of it here.
Okay, could have been a smaller film is what I'm hearing there, but that's in cinemas now for people.
And quickly, I would say, I think this is the kind of thing now that tends to get made on television, and I regret that, because we'd like to see films on this scale in the cinema, but nowadays they go to television.
Yeah, you would like to see more films for grown-ups, wouldn't you, and less superheroes. Okay, not that grown-ups don't like superhero films, which I don't
get,
but anyway, yeah, exactly, yeah. Now, Nadine, Four Things Made for TV. So Munich is on Netflix, and again, this is something that we might have expected in the past to see going into cinemas.
Yeah, it's adapted, of course, from the Robert Harris novel, and it's set at the notorious 1938 Munich conference convened by Adolf Hitler. And it's the story of fictional story, actually. The two characters who lead the cast are not from history, but it's the story of Hugh, who is a minor figure in the British government, and he happened to be at Oxford in the early 1930s. And was great friends with a man called Paul, who wound up in the German Foreign Office. Now, the film then fast forwards to 1938, where Paul in Germany has become extremely anti-Nazi and has come to understand exactly what will come to pass should the treaty be signed. So he wants to sneak his old pal Hugh a document that will prove Hitler's plans, and he has this ambition that he will be able to stop the deaths of millions. Now, the film is very, very well directed with very strong performances. Some people will see it, I think, as being very favourable to how Neville Chamberlain actually performed at that point in history, and he's played by Jeremy Irons. It is a very, very sympathetic portrayal, as indeed Robert Harris has been more sympathetic to him than maybe other figures.
Is this heavy going, Nadine?
Do you know, it actually isn't, which I thought it would be. I thought it would be more about the kind of history and less about the drama. And, you know, fair play to Robert Harris. He knows how to bring a story to life. This story of the two fictional characters, Hugh and Paul, is absolutely gripping because they are young men caught at a pivotal moment in history, knowing that they have a small but so important role to play. And they actually believe that they can halt the progress of what's to come. So the stakes are incredibly high. Their status is incredibly low. And I found it gripping. It's just over 2 hours, well worth seeing. And it's on Netflix.
Okay. Donald, briefly on Belfast, because we did talk about it last week, but like it is all anyone's talking about, and I will take your unique insight on it.
I'll just say quickly as well, to be fair, to Netflix, Munich, The Edge of War was in cinemas.
Let's keep moving. There. Keep moving.
Yeah. Belfast, yeah, I mean, we all know about Belfast. I mean, that Kenneth Branagh's film, which essentially goes back to his own upbringing in the city in 1969. I really liked it. Now, there is already some bubbling out there about the fact that it is so apolitical and that it's somewhat sentimental. And some talk about Judi Dench's accent, which I had no problem with. It's not prominently Belfast. More of a, what the suggestion is that she perhaps comes from somewhere else in Ulster. But I thought she was great. Everyone's great in it. It has taken an awfully long time to get here, which may be a good thing and a bad thing. People are probably thinking that the conversation is already over. But I thought it was a beautifully constructed piece. Yes, it's sentimental. Yes, it sometimes stumbles. There are a few scenes where they try and work in his cinema going and his television watching with the action, which is a bit clunky, particularly one which involves a recreation of High Noon in the house, in the street outside his house. But I thought, as a idealized memory film, rather than any kind of attempt to create Belfast as it was in 69, I thought it worked beautifully.
Okay,
and
so it probably will win Best Picture. Go with it and enjoy. You think it will? Okay.
And can I just add, actually, beautiful picture, but the overuse of Van Morrison in the film. Van Morrison tracks are everywhere. So
I love that.
I think as we might say about Van Morrison, what was it they used to say about your man in Don't Look Up? Different generation.
too much.
Okay, Nadine, the first half of the final season of Ozark has dropped on Netflix. Now, I've watched, I think, three of them. I'm already having anxiety attacks. Like, these people are in so much trouble on so many levels.
Yeah, I binged the whole 7 episodes. There are 7 more episodes to come in the actual finale of this fourth season. But for me, I mean, I began watching Ozark at the very start of the pandemic, catching up on what everyone else had been talking about, and absolutely loved it. So the idea that it was coming back, I could not have been more excited over the past few days. So I did have to binge the 7 episodes. And look, I mean, the Byrd family are getting into a situation that is more and more ridiculous. They are continuing to launder money for the Navarro drug cartel. But now they believe they're going to set up a charitable foundation and everything's going to be fine because they're going to do some really good deeds on top of all the heroin.
I don't even understand what their logic is anymore at this point. Like, the people that are getting killed, it's crazy.
I mean, the cast is phenomenal. Laura Linney is amazing. Jason Bateman is unreal in this. And the female characters, the older female matriarchal characters, it is incredible the extent to which the usual narrative has been turned on its head, where, you know, older women are seen as dominant, forceful, powerful. And then the likes of Ruth Langmore as the younger character played by Julia Garner is another astute, powerful lady with so much momentum. Now, the issue here, however, is that when we arrive into the scenario, a lot of people will remember the family have exited a christening, you know, spattered in blood when a violent murder took place just next to their heads. And then they go to a party hosted by the Navarro drug cartel and they're still trying to get out. But the problem is it is both more ridiculous as a plot and also somehow flatter, because I think when you get to a certain pitch, it's very hard to scale up or down anymore.
And how can they make things worse? Like, but they do every time. Okay, but look.
But I still watch the whole thing.
Yeah, okay. And Donald, also on Netflix, I see Netflix is now, they're pushing this parody of films like The Woman in the Window, which I think you could have confused The Woman in the Window for a parody of itself. But tell us about The Woman in the House Across the Street from the Girl in the Window.
Yeah, I won't say the title again because we're limited for time. So if I say the title again, there'll be time for us all to go. Yeah, the trailers for this already caused great merriment and controversy on Twitter. They seem to me, if I may be so smug, to clearly be, as you suggest, parodies of recent psychological thrillers such as The Girl on the Train and The Woman in the Window. Kristen Bell sees something apparently murderous, but nobody believes her. The trailer then plays with tropes such as her dropping crockery at moments of stress and knocking back wine on her own. It looked pretty funny, but the social media Twitter was swelling with people saying, "Why is the title so long? Lol." And that looks like this is a rip-off of that Amy Adams film, ROTFL, so forth.
Yeah.
I mean, what are they putting in the water? Anyway. It's directed by Michael Lehman, who made Heathers all those years ago. The writers have worked on funny series for Adult Swim Network, and Belle is a very strong comic actor, so there's no way I won't be watching it.
Okay.
But I do wonder a little. I can't think of a series or film that parodied so precise a genre, if you know what I mean. I mean, there are so few films.
Are they parodying one other Netflix film, The Woman in the Window?
I mean, there are so few films in the crosshairs here that they barely constitute a genre at all. But is there a name for films like The Girl on the Train, The Woman in the Window? Also, though, I would say, though it's grossly unfair to deduce anything from a trailer, I loved the first trailer, and the second trailer I really thought, these jokes are wearing a bit thin.
Oh, man. Oh.
Okay. But I'll definitely watch it, and I certainly wouldn't hold that against it, because I like the chutzpah they have of turning on their own to a certain extent, so I shall certainly be giving it a go.
Okay, and that's out on Netflix on Friday. Nadine, final one maybe. There's a new series on Sky Atlantic, and it's kind of being viewed as maybe the new Downton Abbey.
Oh, yes, The Gilded Age was coming to Sky Atlantic on Tuesday at 9 p.m. And for fans of Downton Abbey and Bridgerton, look, sit down, grab your popcorn. It's got Christine Baranski in it and a really good cast generally. Cynthia Nixon is also there. And it's essentially Julian Fellowes' take on old and new money in 19th century New York high society. And again, the upstairs, downstairs, the rivalries, the tensions, the how people are seen in polite society versus what they really think. So I think this one will do very well. But I also just wanted to give a quick mention to Yellow Jackets, which is on Now TV.
Really quick. It's super, isn't it?
And it's just so, so good. So if you like 1990s drama, very arch, very knowing, it's like a cross between Alive, Lord of the Flies and The Craft.
Yeah.
And it's a bunch of schoolgirls whose plane gets stranded while they're travelling to a national
Except
tournament.
Except they didn't give us closure at the end of it. And I don't know if I have another season of it in me. But anyway, it is great.
Well, Yellow Jackets. If you haven't seen it, give it a try.
Okay. And Nadine O'Regan, Donald Clark, thanks a million.